Welcome to Dark Mode, the podcast that brings you sage advice from not one but two technology experts. And that's not just what we call ourselves. It's what our moms tell people when they can't figure out why their iCloud isn't syncing anymore. I'm your host, Luke Miani.
And I'm your host, Noah Rubin. On this show, we take questions from listeners, attempt to answer them to varying degrees of success, and maybe even have a laugh or two along the way. And I think maybe I get set up for this podcast with varying degrees of success, because for the people that saw the pre-show, it was a little bit of a mess, but we're here now. We're ready.
Some might even question your technology expert status after what we witnessed, which was really quite the calamity. Not having charged accessories ready on hand, joining with the wrong camera, having your camera askew, and then not knowing how to fix it, and having the wrong audio. You committed a lot of cardinal sins.
This is true, but I was able to quickly remedy the situation and get us up. Notice, by the way, for you, not for the people listening, because they probably wouldn't know, but we started 5 minutes early. The people that are watching live can attest to that. You can attest to that. We did not start the podcast late. So I would say that this actually furthers my ability to show that not only am I able to do all of these things and get everything set up, but I'm able to do it under pressure. That's what I submit to you.
Wow. You know, let me consider your submission. Submission considered, submission accepted. I buy it. I think you got yourself out of that jam real well.
Good. So now that I'm a technology expert again, we can continue with the podcast.
Exactly right. And we got to address the title. There's something in the air, because Noah's had a bit of an update lately. This is something that you've talked about doing for a while, but now you're actually doing a trial run. And I think it's a pretty interesting topic with I just remembered. I was about to say with my latest video, but then I realized I haven't actually uploaded it yet because I'm waiting on sponsor approval. So in my mind, I've been thinking about this and talking about this for days, but I haven't actually shown anybody it yet. So we'll get a little sneak preview of it. But would you like to discuss your experiment?
Yeah. So I've talked on the show quite a bit about the MacBook Air and my desire to go all the way from the 16-inch MacBook Pro. It's a bit chonky, it's a bit beefy, for good reason, mind you, but, you know, it's a big boy. And for me, you know, honestly, I may not need all of that power. And I also really value the portability, because I travel a lot, and even just going to and from work, you know, I bike to work. So whatever I've got in my backpack, on my back, whatever. So I've been thinking about the MacBook Air for a long time, and I finally went ahead and arranged it. So I have right here an M3 MacBook Air. This is a loaner from my company. So I have this for a week. I might extend it a little bit, but we'll say a week to try it out as my work laptop. And then if I like it, I can actually switch from my Intel MacBook Pro. I have the 16-inch i9 Intel MacBook Pro. That's a relic right there. Switch from that to potentially this nice 13-inch MacBook Air if I like it.
And that is an interesting conundrum there that you bring up, because both your work and personal laptops are 16-inch MacBook Pros, the 16-inch Intel and the 16-inch M1 Max. And this is an interesting trend that I've noticed, because I mean, straight up, at the end of the day, you now don't have to spend as much money to get a fantastic Mac as you used to. And I might have mentioned this at some point over the years, but I actually had a friend in college who, I think this was like around, it must have been early COVID, so before Apple Silicon was available in 2020, and she had, you know, a MacBook Air, the usual college device, and she was like, well, look, I really want a larger display because it's COVID. I'm on meetings. I'm on this thing all the time. I want more screen space. And at that time, that meant getting a 16-inch MacBook Pro. So that's what she did. And she didn't need the performance. She didn't really use all of the power that it had. She liked having extra storage because obviously the standard 512 was more than her 128 MacBook Air. But apart from that, the only reason for that purchase was screen size. And even though you're going in the opposite direction, what you're kind of demonstrating now is a lot of people who previously would have had to buy a 16-inch MacBook Pro, either for screen size or performance, can now get away with a MacBook Air, a 13-inch for you if you want portability, or a 15-inch for someone like her that just wants screen size. It's kind of hard to recommend anything other than a MacBook Air unless you really actually need that performance.
No, I completely agree. And it's definitely an Apple Silicon shift, because before Apple Silicon, there's no way that I would have considered getting a MacBook Air, anything other than a MacBook Pro. I mean, we had MacBook Airs in high school, and those were Intel MacBook Airs. And for high school stuff, they were generally fine. They weren't the greatest computers and of the greatest battery life. They weren't the most powerful things, but for basic school things, they were fine. For me, I would want, you know, the battery life and the increased power. And so it was always going to be MacBook Pro, at very least for the power. Maybe not the battery life, but for the power, definitely a MacBook Pro. But now you're at the point where a lot of people really don't need that. And that's something that, like, I, for a while, didn't want to, like, admit to myself, because I'm like, oh, I'm, like, a programmer. I'm a pro. I want, like, a MacBook Pro with all the power and whatever and stuff. But, like, realistically, the sort of programming that I'm doing is not that, like, intensive. I have my IDE, you know, my coding application running. Maybe I have, like, an iPhone simulator running or a web browser where I'm, you know, previewing the thing that I'm working on, some documentation, a few other things, but it's nothing that's like so crazy intense that it needs all of this power. And so, you know, now that Apple Silicon as a base is like so powerful, like the base, you know, M1, M2, M3, M4, those base chips are so powerful. I haven't tested it yet, but I'm pretty confident that I can do everything that I would regularly do on a base Apple Silicon chip without any issues. And then that opens the door to considering different hardware. Maybe I don't need the Pro anymore. Maybe if I really value the portability and all of that, then I can look into the Air. So it's kind of exciting.
Yeah. And I'm just pulling up over here. Let me go ahead and screen share this to underscore your point about what do you actually need performance-wise. I recall right after Apple Silicon came out, you made a video. Your then quarterly uploads on your YouTube channel about...
Oh, geez, I really... I didn't. That was like a jump scare seeing myself from a few years ago.
Alarming how long ago this now was, but it was, you know, 4 and a bit years ago now. And sure enough, you were comparing your then, I think it was your 2018 15-inch MacBook Pro that you were still using because you were waiting for a MacBook Pro with Apple Silicon, and you compared it to the M1 MacBook Air. And the M1 MacBook Air was honestly, like, extremely, I think it was in some cases faster even.
Yeah, I think it, I don't remember exactly what happened in this video, but I think it was in a lot of cases close or a little slower or a little bit faster. But it was like, yeah, I mean, that versus the 2018, that thing had, I think, like an i9 in it. It was like a pretty, it was not a base spec 15-inch MacBook Pro. It was an upgraded MacBook Pro. And the M1 MacBook Air was still, you know, neck and neck with it, maybe even better.
Yeah, you had the i9 MacBook Pro, the 2018, the infamous one. Maybe I should buy one of those and talk about how much it sucks even more now, 7 years later. But I'll tell you what. What I think is very interesting for you specifically is going to be what Apple does next. And I think this is I'm starting to see openings in what Apple could do for a next generation of MacBook Pro that might suit what you want more. Because I have a feeling that for your personal device, the 16 inch is too big. I'm honestly there as well. The 16-inch Intel MacBook Pro, I don't know if this is a placebo or what. It felt smaller than the Apple Silicon one. The Apple Silicon 16s are big boys. They're very chonky. They're squared off. It's, you know, I bring it when I need, if I'm running and gunning, like when I go to Australia for the iPhone launch, that's what I bring because I want the screen space, the battery life, and the performance. But most of the time, 99% of the time, what I think both of us want is a 14-inch MacBook Pro with an M Series Pro chip, not the Max, for best value, that's thinner and lighter and smaller. That's really what we need. And I think that's basically what we're going to get at the end of next year. Obviously, the MacBook Air is a fantastic device, and so is the MacBook Pro. You really can't go wrong. But the one thing that I would want is something that's just a little bit in between in terms of performance and portability. And I don't think Apple's going to make a third product lineup. I think realistically what we're looking at is thinner and lighter MacBook Pro with OLED display, M5 or 6 or whatever we're going to be, 6 probably by the time it comes out. I think that might actually be the device for you. A 14.
That does sound pretty nice, because I will say, so I have the MacBook Air right here. I literally got this Friday afternoon, and it's my work laptop, so like I used it on Friday. I wrote a document on it on Friday, and it was a pretty good experience, but I haven't really used it over the weekend because, you know, I'm not working right now. But mm-hmm. I will say my initial impression is I really like, it's a lot smaller and it's a lot lighter. It's super thin. Like, I really like the body. But some things that came up, you know, there's only ports on the left side. The right side That's only has one. The headphone jack. So not even that I plug that much stuff into the Mac, but also, like, you know, sometimes I want to plug stuff in on the right side because it's more convenient, but there's no ports there. Also, for my work laptop, I have to have the security key in one of the ports. So I realistically only have one port on this computer, more or less. But that's a work problem.
That's valid though, because on your 16-inch Intel you had 4 ports, so that doesn't really matter. But that on that it's using half your ports.
No, that is true. And then the bezels are obviously a bit bigger. The screen doesn't have ProMotion, which doesn't bother me that much, honestly. But like, I do agree that there are some things that it's like, yes, this is the entry level. You know, Apple, a lot of Apple products have the entry level and the sort of pro level. iPhone does it, iPad does it, Mac does it with the Air versus the Pro. So some of these things you can clearly tell that it is. And so as far as what you're saying about a MacBook Pro that's sort of an in-between between a Pro and an Air, but it sort of has those Pro features that you would want, that does sound very compelling. I want to see for this week coming up when I'm going to use this MacBook Air, how much the things that it lacks, how much those things bother me. Because I wonder, they honestly might, and then I'll say, ooh, I like this, but I really want the Pro experience. There are things from the Pro that I'm missing. And then what you said sounds perfect. Maybe I'll be surprised and I'll say, you know what? I can do without those other things and this will be fine. So I'm very curious to see how it goes, but I definitely agree that for a lot of people, and potentially for me, something that's sort of in the middle, but that still retains the Pro specific features would be very desirable.
And it's really interesting that when you mention features that make the Air feel entry level, nowhere in that did you say it's slow or it doesn't do the tasks that I need it to do. And that's what I think is so interesting about the current generation of MacBook Air, especially the M4, now that they've really dialed in the price and the value that machine has. It's pretty crazy, dude, how powerful these things are. And I saw an interesting comment earlier from Alex here saying, can we put a fan back in the MacBook Air since it's clear the current design isn't up to snuff with the internals? I disagree. I frankly don't think that that's the case at all. Now, does the M4 MacBook Air offer the same sustained performance as the M4 Mac Mini? No. If you buy a Mac Mini or a MacBook Pro, you will get better long-term performance. But to say that the MacBook Air is not up to snuff or that it's throttling or something like that, that I would push back on significantly because, honestly, I mean, first of all, for 99% of people that buy the MacBook Air, they're not even going to know. Straight up, not going to be an issue. They will not encounter that level of task that will expose the weaknesses in the chip, straight up. But more importantly, you're not paying that much of a penalty. And in return, what you get is a completely silent, very, very, very thin device that literally you cannot find a more portable, well-built, good-looking laptop out there for $1,000. I challenge anybody to drop me a link or a product name in the chat here and we'll go through and look at them. I straight up do not think, and obviously I'm biased, but I do not think that you will find a better overall value at that price point. You might find something with an OLED screen. You might find something with, you know, an aluminum build quality, but I don't think you're going to be able to find me $1,000, good performance, fanless, high quality display, high quality build. You know what I mean? And it's so different compared to, you mentioned our the MacBook Airs that we had in high school. Those were entry level devices, and you could tell.
Yeah, these, like, I mean, again, so going back to, you know, what you're saying about this, like, these things, these MacBook Airs are so thin that, like, yes, maybe, like you said, the sustained performance is not 100% of what it potentially could be. But at the end of the day, it's a little bit of a trade-off. And like you said, you know, the performance that you're losing, you're not losing that much, and most people aren't even going to notice it. But the fact is that you get this computer that is so thin, and it's, I guess, a little bit lighter because there's less, you know, there's no fan in there, so it's less machinery. But mostly it's less thin, it's thinner. And, you know, you get, you definitely get, like, you get your money's worth out of this thing, right? The fact that you get it for so thin, and you get all of the power, all the performance that it has, like, it's definitely a good value. And yeah, I mean, those MacBook Airs that we had, I guess they must have been, what, 2012 or 2013 MacBook Airs.
They were mid-2013 MacBook Airs. They had the fourth generation Core i5. It was like a 1.3 gigahertz, I think. We had 4 gigabytes of RAM. Because ours, that was the last year that they had 4 gigs of RAM. After that, they moved to 8. So we had 4 gigs of RAM, 128 gigs of storage. And we were always, remember how we would always get pissed because they would do the software updates. You knew exactly what I was going to say before I even said it.
Yeah, of course, of course.
They, obviously, this was in, you know, we were in a high school. Our class was probably 300 people, something like that. Not a huge school, but not small. And obviously the IT team, like at the beginning of the school year, you would get the device completely reset. So all of your stuff was gone from last year. If there were any new apps or whatever, that is when you would get that. But the software versions could not be updated. And so over the summer, probably sometime in August or whatever, is when they would, you know, roll out and update all of the MacBooks. But September was always when the new software would come out. And so we were, for 99% of the school year, we were a full software version out of date. And in those days, that was not fun for us because we were tech dudes and we used these MacBooks a lot. And the worst one, I think it must have been sophomore year. Yeah, it was sophomore year because 2014.
I know what you're
saying. And that was when, that was when Yosemite came out and we were stuck with Mavericks the entire school year. And I was so mad about that because Yosemite was like the most incredible update. And we missed the entire year. I mean, we had it on our personal, you know, 2011 MacBooks at home. But in school, which we were there all day, all the time, doing all of our homework, they were always so outdated, and we were so pissed about that.
Yeah, that was wow, that was always really – yeah, because, like, we would start the school year in, like, early September, and then, you know, late September, October, whatever, the new version of macOS would come out, and they would never – I'm sure, like, we must have asked them one time, like, oh, can we please update – and they're like, no, because, like, for them, what do they care? Like, the IT department's not going to spend all the time doing that. Most of the students don't care. But for us, it was always, like, that was always annoying. And then sometimes, like, there, I think I was signed in with my iCloud account on my school computer, too, because I would, like, use iMessage on it and stuff. Mm. And so sometimes there would be, like, a new feature that would come out, and it wouldn't work on the school laptop because the school laptop was operating system behind. I don't remember specific examples, but I know that that definitely happened at some point.
I think that also was a Yosemite thing, because I'm pretty sure there were some iMessage features that came out, but we were on the old iMessage on the laptops. Mm-hmm. You're definitely right. I do remember that. And I will say this. You know, obviously, you're in high school for 4 years. We got those laptops in fall of 2013 when they were brand new. And I remember being excited about that because that was only the second update of the, you know, the quote unquote new design, which had MagSafe 2 instead of 1. You know, they were nice devices when they came out. But by the time that we graduated, I distinctly remember them feeling slow. It, you know, in those 4 year, you know, those 4 years of usage, and, you know, you and I took care of them. There were a bunch of people that didn't. Oh, and for context, for those watching and listening, the way that our school did this was we had the same computer through all 4 years, but we didn't keep them over the summer. So, like, you'd get to school, they'd give you the laptop with, you know, it updated or whatever, but it, you know, it had a sticker on the top and a barcode with your name and your school, your student ID attached to it. So it was like your laptop. At the end of the school year, you'd turn them in, they'd wipe them, update them, reset everything, put stuff on it, and then give them back. So we had the same computers through all 4 years with those, you know, gaps for summer. And you and I were good. We took care of our devices. A lot of people didn't. I have some photos in my camera roll of some let me see if I can even find one of these. There were some really tough MacBook Airs that went around, and I think I remember some people having replacements along the way as well.
I do remember that too. But yeah, that was always, like, to your point, we took good care of them. They were wiped every year, so it wasn't like, oh, 4 years of cruft building up. They were re-imaged, like, wiped from scratch every year. So that last year that we had them, it was, you know, brand new operating system, new installation, and you know, we were doing school stuff, so it was mostly just like internet browsing, Google Docs, I don't know, presentations, stuff like that. So it was not like very intense, you know, difficult work that we were trying to do. But I do remember that, like, by the end, by that fourth year, they were definitely very slow. Definitely not in the way that, you know, my MacBook Pro that I'm using right now, my 2021, you know, M1 MacBook Pro. I mean, it's a MacBook Pro, not an Air, I'll give it that. But, like, 4 years on, it is not slow in the way that Macs used to get slow after a couple of years. It's a huge improvement. Yeah.
And that was the thing, is, you know, obviously, you know, time feels slower when it passes slower when you're in high school. You know, those 4 years feel like a long time. So after we had these devices for that amount of time, I was like, oh man, our old MacBook Airs are really feeling slow. But the thing is, nowadays, that we're talking about an M1 MacBook Air, 4 and a bit years old. An M1 MacBook Air, it might not look quite as nice as the redesign, the new generation, but there is certainly no sense that it is slow at all. I mean, that's part of my video that I'm working on here, is that computer, even the base model that would have, I'm sure, people that went to our high school starting in 2021 got those computers. I'm sure they did. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens with, you know, how long are these computers going to last? Because our computers, I think by the end of our usage, by the end of our time at high school, we had the option to buy them from the school for like $350 or something like that, which is honestly not terrible. Neither of us chose to do it though, because they were slow. They had 4 gigs of RAM, not a lot of storage, very, very weak i5s. I mean, I remember pushing those MacBook Airs, and even with the limited software that we had access to in high school, you could really get the fan going in those.
Oh yeah. Yeah, but it's a good point that, like, when those students that have M1 or even, you know, especially M2 MacBook Airs, when they get to the end of those 4 years, and if they still have the option to buy those computers, like, that could be realistically a decent option, or at least something worth considering, because that's the kind of thing. Yeah, it's 4 years old at that point, but it's an Apple Silicon laptop. You could take that thing and take it to college, and, you know, depending on your major, you could probably be perfectly fine with that for another 4 years if you wanted to. So it's definitely a different time than not to sound old or anything, because we're really not that old, but it's definitely a different time. You know, the kids these days have it easy.
Oh my gosh, dude. Sorry, I'm trying to like pull up a picture of one of the MacBook Airs that was demolished in our school, and we're kind of getting at another topic that I want to discuss a little bit later, but maybe we do it now, which is the bugginess of software. Because I would say that, you know, in terms of hardware, in terms of where we're at, in terms of MacBooks in the last couple of years, rock solid, no notes almost. But software, really getting on my nerves. I wanted to pull up, and I think it did work, so I can show you guys this MacBook from a classmate. But in getting this photo, I encountered so many bugs. Let me just pull the photo up, and then I'll tell you about my experience in the last 3 minutes. So, you know how I mentioned that we took care of our laptops, but others didn't? This is a photo that I dug up out of my camera roll here from like 2016. That's a little tough. And by the way, that is fully closed lid. Like, that, it's not propped open. That was what happened to this poor thing.
Do you have like the uncensored version of this picture? Like, do you know whose laptop this is?
I do, and I can send it to you.
I have a guess for whose it is, but I kind of want to really know.
Whoa, you actually, you remember this?
I might be wrong, but I have a guess.
it's so funny that, and I mean, look, this is just the one that I knew I had a picture of that came to mind right away. It's just very interesting that I think this guy did get his laptop replaced. I don't remember what caused this issue, but it was it still worked, by the way, and the screen was not cracked. I don't know how.
It wasn't cracked. It was just a little bit bent.
Yeah,
it's okay.
I'll give them this. Those MacBooks were surprisingly durable.
Yeah, they had to be, clearly.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. I remember everyone saying, oh, they're so thin, they're going to break. And I was like, nah, don't you worry about that. We knew that they were going to be fine.
If you take care of them.
You know what? You're not wrong about that. But let's switch gears to talk about bugs and glitches. Because this is something I put a post out, and I'm going to open it up to you guys here. Now, obviously, what I experienced pulling up that photo was in macOS, but my focus is on iOS because I think that's where the most anger is. Right now, Apple's software is in kind of a bad spot. There's a lot of bugs. There's a lot of just unpolished feeling things. We talked about Apple Intelligence. That's one of them. But even beyond that, into just sort of core functionality of the phones, I have had so many issues over the past, honestly, at this point, we're talking about like 3 years of iOS updates where there's new features, sure, but with every new feature, you get three new bugs. I've been having, the one that I've been having a lot lately, which I'm trying to get on camera, is I'm having a lot of issues with the closing out of an app. You know, just swiping up from the bottom and it freezes and it won't do it. And I have to lock the phone and then unlock it to get it to work again. I've had problems with apps just completely locking up and have to kill them out. And you know, somebody here, Larry, just asked, am I a beta user? I am not. I am not on beta software. I am on normal release software. And there are still this many problems. It's kind of getting out of control.
Can I go off for like 1 minute on a bug that has bothered me for a long time?
Do it.
Okay. It's an iOS bug, but I think we can talk about, I mean, I think all of Apple software has some bug issues right now. It's iOS, and it's specifically, I'm going to cover this up because it has like pictures of my friends, but it's the feature where you create a lock screen and you can have it cycle through different pictures. And that's the lock screen that I use because I have a lot of pictures in my camera roll, and it's fun to like cycle through them and look at old memories of like trips that I've done, whatever. But one of the options, you can choose like nature, cities, and then people. People is an option. You can cycle through pictures of people. And the thing that annoys me, I'm going to cover this up again. When I go into the people selector screen, I have 13 options. I'm going to cover this up, but I will say that you're in there. So that's,
yay,
that's good.
That's me.
That's the most important one. But I have 13 options for people. And if I go into my people album in the photos app, I have like, wait, like, look at how many people I have. This is way more than 13 people, right? But in that thing, only 13 people show up, and it's a random, I can't figure out why. Like, my parents and my sister don't show up there as options. And I have tons of pictures with them from, you know, many, over the course of many years, they don't show up. But some of my friends that I've only known for like a year or two do show up as those 13 people. There's literally no rhyme or reason. And I went as far as to delete all of the people from that, like the people place. Like, you can delete all the people and it'll like reset. It doesn't just delete the people. It pops up and it's like, do you want to reset your like people something? And then it rescans all of the photos in your library and like, you know, where it'll suggest people and say, oh, this person's in all these pictures. It like rebuilds that entire thing. And then I re-added all of those people that were there and it didn't fix the issue. So I still only see 13 people, despite the fact that I have literally like a few dozen people in my photos album. And it's so annoying. And I don't use that feature for people because I can't pick all the people that I want. It's only like a couple of people that I would want. There's a lot that I would want that are missing. And it's been an issue for at least, I think it's been an issue since that was added. What was that, iOS 16, when they added the new lock screens?
Yeah. I mean, it's not recent, and that's what I think is most embarrassing about that. So it's been that issue. That was like what, two and a half, almost 3 years ago, I guess, that they added.
I mean,
that.
There's been three versions, 16, 17, 18, and it has never worked. It's never shown me all of the people that it's supposed to show me.
Dude, that's what I'm talking about. That's a perfect example. It's just, how are we not even going back in to clean up the previous features bugs before we're moving on to new stuff? It's like they announce a feature, it doesn't work correctly, and then they never get around to fixing or improving it. They just move on to the next one. And so then you end up with like, it almost feels like an arms race between phone manufacturers right now, where like, I feel like the core functionality has been there for, at this point, probably about 8 years. I would say when the iPhone 10 came out with the current, you know, modern interface with the bar and the swipe gestures and Face ID, like the first modern iPhone, as we could now call it. Since then, the fundamentals have been there. Not a ton has changed. And I feel like what's happening is that Apple feels that they need to keep adding something all the time, every single year, to just say, you know, here's a new feature, here's a new feature, here's what's new, update, do this, do that. And they're not necessarily doing them all that effectively. That, you know, there's features like that. And that's one example. I'm sure people in chat are going to have a lot of other examples as well, of just like, you're kind of just drowning in a sea of gimmicky features that don't really work that well. And I really don't know how we have to get out of it. So let me back up for a second, because what I want to do is we're about a month out from WWDC and iOS 19, which is apparently going to be a very significant overhaul, not just visually, but hopefully in terms of stability. So what I want you guys to do, and I made a post over on the channel about this as well, I want to highlight the issues, the bugs, the limitations that we're experiencing with Apple right now. But obviously, it can be challenging to record and document a lot of these bugs, because sometimes it just happens in the middle of the day. I don't have a camera. I can't do it on command. So I am crowdsourcing. I know a lot of people have these issues. And if you have proof, if you have a recording, screenshot, video from another device, or a screen recording of a bug, send it to me so that I can put it in a video. This is my little idea here. I'll put the email up on screen and we'll leave that up for a couple of minutes. But my post on YouTube was basically that iOS is really buggy right now. And frankly, it's unacceptable the level of bugs and malfunctions that people are having to deal with. So if you can document it, send it to me. I'm going to put together a big old video. Hopefully I can capture some of my own. I already had some. I've had a lot of bugs in Apple Maps. I've had a lot of bugs in Photos. And I want to just see how much we can collect. I posted this a couple hours ago, and I already have about a dozen emails in my inbox there showing all of these bugs. It's crazy.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, every time I run into a bug like this, this stuff happens, I think about, like, look, iOS, macOS, these operating systems are incredibly complex. They're incredibly complicated. Mm-hmm. There are so many things that you don't even think about. But, like, mm-hmm. for example, MDM, mobile device management. If you're like a school or a company or whatever, you can remotely manage devices that your employees or your students or your teachers or whatever use. And so there's all of this complexity of, like, all of these features. Not only do they have to work for, like, normal users, but they have to, like, be controllable by this, like, mobile device management thing. And they have to, like, work with, like, you know, governments that use iPhones have, like, their own things that they impose on them. And then, like, different languages, like, this, you know, iOS has to work with all different languages, and not all languages use Latin characters, and some languages are right to left instead of left to right. There's so much. I could go on and on about, like, how many edge cases and how many, like, things have to be accounted for that, like,
yeah,
it's extremely complicated, and I totally get it. But, like, at the end of the day, this is software, these operating systems, it's software that's being used by millions, I don't know about billions, but millions and millions of people around the world. It's operating system, so it's, like, fundamental to all of these products. And Apple is incredibly rich. So there's no reason why they couldn't, like, hire more people or, you know, I don't know what it is, hire more people or increase pay to attract more people, or I don't know, have better perks to retain people that they have. Whatever it is, they have the money to make it happen where they can, not even the money aside, but the planning. And I wanted to bring up, it was, I think it was Mountain Lion. It was the one where they announced and they're like, no new features. You remember what I'm talking about? They announced, they're like, how many new features are in this version? 100 new features? 500 new features? No, there are zero new features. That was like a thing that they did in the keynote. And the whole point of that update, whichever one it was, maybe it was Mountain Lion, maybe it was a different one. It was about stability, making the system, making the operating system more stable, fixing the bugs, all of that stuff. I really think that Apple needs that across the board. So money aside, it can just be a planning thing. And I get that, like, they need to launch new features to get people excited and to you know, generate more revenue, and like making things more stable isn't going to do that. But it's like desperately needed. It's that thing. Is this like Tragedy of the Commons or something? It's like you need the stability, but it's like no one wants to do it because it's, you know, not very flashy and it's not going to bring in a lot of revenue.
Yeah,
but it really needs to happen.
Exact. And you're right. And the software that you're referring to, the one where they had that zero new features, was Snow Leopard. And the thing, that reminded me. I had a tweet that went a little bit viral a couple of months ago because I was at Philadelphia Airport and there was an alert message up on one of the terminal displays and it was running Snow Leopard. And that sparked recollection that Snow Leopard was an operating system that, I mean, clearly still is in use in many cases and was a extremely popular operating system, especially for large scale deployments, because it was absolutely rock solid and it was dependable and it will always work. You will never, ever, ever have just random glitches and bugs in Snow Leopard because of that exact reason. And Mountain Lion, I think, was pretty similar. They definitely didn't add a ton of features. But it was, I remember those operating systems, all of them feeling absolutely ironclad. It was like a World War II bunker. You could not get them to misbehave. Now, though, I mean, I'm having a bug right now on the Mac because I was going to go try to find that photo of Snow Leopard on the Philadelphia terminal. And
I found it, by the way.
Oh, you found it. Wow. Well, because let me show you what I...
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead first.
Yeah, let me go ahead and send this over to my Mac. Because this is what happened when you literally cannot make this up. In trying to show you guys a video of how stable Snow Leopard used to be, I wanted to go and open up the Photos app and go find this photo. Oh, stop it. Why are you doing that? Don't download it. I'm just trying to put this in a Chrome tab so that I can view it. I don't need you to put it in the downloads folder. Oh my God. Well, I'm just going to hold up my phone. This is getting ridiculous. Here's what I saw.
Let's
see, can we go sideways here?
That looks a little pink.
Yeah. I've been having this bug a lot lately. You can see it shows, like, there's videos in here, right? So you can see. Oh yeah, there's a comment icon because that was a photo sent in messages. If I scroll over here, you can see a timestamp and you can see this is very difficult to do in reverse. You can see the pinwheel of death. Yeah, I've been having this bug a lot lately in Photos where you open it and everything is pink and the app is locked up and you have to force quit it.
That's never happened to me, but that's bad. That's like the one thing that you want to do in the Photos app.
Yep. And it's also happened to me on iOS. And in fact, one of the emails that I got from my post on the channel was somebody sending that picture of that same bug, which I can't find it on here. But yeah, dude, isn't that crazy? Like, how is it that we have gone from these absolutely legendary, rock-solid operating systems to now I can't even open the Photos app to show you a picture of it because the whole app's broken?
That's kind of rough. I do need to show this picture, though, because it's not going to help your case. This is in the Philadelphia airport. It's the Mac running Snow Leopard, and you might notice that it's kernel panicking.
No!
But this picture, I took this picture in April of 2023. This was April 2023 that they still have the old operating system kicking around in the Philadelphia airport.
Hang on a minute. Show that up again.
The picture?
Yeah. Pull that up.
You want me to send it to you?
I'm just trying to figure out something real quick here. I think that's Leopard.
Yeah, I think not the Snow wallpaper. Leopard.
Yeah. My point stands. Ha ha ha.
Okay, yeah, okay, fair enough.
Because the Leopard has that little hint of like bluish greenish down in the bottom left. And Snow Leopard, the stars are brighter and twinklier. And it's like more pinkish. It was more blurred. And it doesn't have the green.
Wasn't it more blurry in Snow Leopard too?
I think it was. Ha ha ha! Ha ha! Snow Leopard.
Well, there you go.
Undefeated operating system. They should have run whatever that was on Snow Leopard. That's what I say.
I agree. I think that system's about due for an upgrade by now.
Yeah, to Snow Leopard.
Yeah, exactly. Just, you know, one version is enough. But yeah, that's. Yeah, I don't know. Those operating systems, aside from being very nostalgic, they definitely were solid in a way that operating systems today aren't. And to be fair, they are a bit simpler, a bit less complicated. They don't have as many features as the current operating systems do. But you can argue that's a good thing or a bad thing, because obviously with fewer features, it's less buggy, and some of the features that are added are things that you don't even care about. Like, I don't know, Stage Manager. Like, imagine actually using Stage Manager. But, like,
yeah,
they
right.
added that feature.
Which, and by I wonder the way, if that can I just is, say?
Yeah.
You know when you have a new Mac or an updated or whatever, and the default setting is now when you click on the desktop, it opens Stage Manager?
Oh yeah, and it like moves your windows off to the side or whatever.
Yeah, it like whoosh, it like explodes it out. I don't know if that's even Stage Manager, but it's a feature that is in Stage Manager, and they made it a default setting. So in either one, you click the desktop, and it you know, it shows the desktop. But it does that when you're not in Stage Manager, and I hate that. And that is the first thing that I always do whenever I set up Mac OS. The literal first thing that I do is go in and turn that off, because I hate that thing with a burning passion.
No, I agree. I did that on my MacBook Air on Friday. That was the second thing that I changed. And maybe you can guess what the first thing was.
Was it the scroll direction?
Of course.
You rat. You absolutely
rat. We don't need to get into that again.
No, we're going to do it. You're wrong. You're just wrong.
I feel like we've beat this one to death, and I thought maybe we would agree.
Yeah, we have
disagree.
Beat it to death, but it's been a year, and I'm going to just demolish you in one simple sentence. If I'm on a Mac or an iPhone, let me ask you this. When you're on a phone and you want to scroll down a page, do the motion with your finger in the air of what you would do to move down a page.
I guess you go like this.
Yep. And now
like this.
Yep. Yep. So your finger is moving up to move the page down. That's what we're all used to. So then now do the same motion as you would do on your trackpad.
Well, that's, see, it's a little bit different because the trackpad is separate from the content. So I'm not moving, well, I really can't do this. I'm not moving the content directly. I'm moving it from afar. So it's a different sort of paradigm, if you will.
Well, so the distance that you are from the content means that you move your fingers in opposite directions to control it. That sounds goofy. That's a lot of it's steps not... to say, on my phone I do this, and on my Mac I do this, to do the same thing.
It's not the distance. It's whether your finger is physically touching the content that you're moving, or if it's operating a device that is sort of separate from the content that is moving. That's the difference.
That's ridiculous. Chat, let us know who is right. If you have a Mac and you're not using natural scrolling, explain how you went wrong mentally. Explain why. Maybe, well, I don't know, maybe your parents didn't raise you right. Maybe you have some sort of an undiagnosed thing that you need to, like, get look into. Maybe there's, like, a...
undiagnosed genius.
Maybe you're... I was going to say maybe you're a psychopath or a serial killer or something. I don't know. Because clearly there is something amiss. Maybe you need to go to therapy. I don't know. There is an issue there because it is just ridiculous to go like this and then to go like this. That's stupid.
I think that the real travesty is the fact that they named this feature natural scrolling, because that implies that it's correct. But not only is it not correct, but it used to not be the default. The default used to be the way that I do it, which is the correct way. And then not only did Apple change it, but they had the gall to name it in such a way that it sounds like it should be correct, even though it's not. So if you want to talk about macOS bugs, the fact that this feature not only exists, but is the default, is itself a bug. And that needs to be fixed in the next version, or I will switch to Windows.
Well, I would argue, first of all, that there's not a chance in hell that you're going to do that. And second of all, that what they did, in fact, was fix the bug that was calling the prior incorrect direction natural scrolling. They have, in fact, corrected themselves because it was a relic of the past. I get it. You were born in 1910, and you like to think of things how they were 70, 80 years ago, back when you were a little boy. But the difference here is that one of the motions, this is a comment in chat here, one of the motions moves in the same direction as the content, scrolling on your phone. The other one, the finger moves in the same direction of the scroll bar, the thing on the right of the screen. I'm getting a little confused by the wording here, but I think what they're trying to say is that on the desktop in the past, if, you know, before we were blessed with the invention of multi-touch, you would go with your mouse, you would click on the scroll bar, and you would drag it down to move down the page. And so the thinking goes that you move down with your fingers to scroll down the page, because you're moving in the same direction as you would drag the scroll bar. But the scroll bar is a relic. It's a relic. That would be like if you opened up your phone and you had a little dial for like a rotary phone. No, you don't need that because it's outdated. You wouldn't say, well, the correct way to dial a phone is to go whoosh, 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 because that would be silly. And now the same is true of scrolling.
Here's the thing. I agree with you that, you know, progress is a good thing. Times change, things change. You know, we don't need a digital rotary phone. I agree. But there are some things from the past that we would do well to carry with us into the future.
Oh.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
Like what? The family unit, okay? The family unit is a good one. I'm not, look.
Bro's whipping out the family unit to defend
your
scrolling.
Family, Your family can, it can look however you want it to. I'm not saying it has to be a mother, a father, and two children. It can, your family can be whatever you want it to be. But having, you know, you gotta have someone to raise you. You gotta be raised right. You gotta learn how to do the right thing. Okay, that's very important in your sort of development as a child. We need some of these things that we have from the past. Okay. Unnatural. No, see, now you got me doing it. The original default scrolling, the scrolling that I use, is one of those things that we have from the past that we can bring into the future as well. And it just, why reinvent the wheel? Sometimes you want to reinvent the wheel. Sometimes you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Sometimes things are good enough as they are. You don't have to fix what's not broken.
Well, the reality of the situation is, if you wish to cling to the past, you can. But the rest of the world has moved on. And in your own analogy, you proved that. The family unit doesn't have to be the nuclear family from 1951. Sure. So why does your scrolling need to be from 1951? That's what I would like to know. Why are you open-minded about those things, but you're not open-minded about how to scroll down a website?
Look, I'm not saying that I'm not open-minded about it. I have experienced this quote-unquote natural scrolling before. I mean, this Mac that I just set up on Friday, before I, you know, fixed the feature as it was set, I was using that scrolling for a little bit because I had to, you know, set up the computer and everything before I was able to change that setting. I have experienced it. And look, I will extend you an olive branch, and I will say, whatever you're used to, maybe that's what it is. Whatever you're used to is what you can go with. And so for these new people, you're very red right now.
I cooked you. I've figured out the way to demolish your entire argument.
Look, Apple changed the default setting. All of the people that are using macOS now, after the setting has changed, the people that are new to it and are using it, they're going to get used to it. They're going to experience that. Apple has a lot of control over their ecosystem. They can choose what apps go on their app store and what apps don't, to at least some extent. They can make a lot of choices. They can sort of shape the way that people use their products. And Apple, for some reason, has chosen to, you know, nudge people towards using natural scrolling. And so those people that learn that way, that begin that way, perfectly fine for them. But for people that already know the sort of old default, the non-natural scrolling, we need a better name for it. Because I would argue that that's natural, but, you know, if Apple's going to call it natural scrolling, we'll come up with a better name for it. But for people that are already used to it, when I say, why reinvent the wheel? Look, at the end of the day, this isn't that big of a deal, okay? And we're talking about going like this versus like this. We're not talking about a wheel versus a multi-touch, okay? That's, you know, that's a little bit of a false equivalency. So we gotta just put that out there.
But I'm gonna jump in there and obliterate you. And I'm gonna seize on the last thing that you said there, that false equivalency. Let me walk you through this. We're gonna do this high school debate style. Would you agree that the traditional means of scrolling is already an adaptation? Because multi-touch, as we know, was not the initial means of interacting with the content on a web page. Would you agree to that?
Sure. I mean, we used to multi-touch before it existed, and even still today, you use like a mouse. You can use a mouse to interact with content.
So before we had a multi-touch gesture where we could go like this to scroll down a page, what would you do? You would use your mouse to go to the sidebar, and you would click that and drag it down. If I may now draw your attention to an argument that you made previously, whereupon you stated that when using a phone, you directly interact with the content. Yeah? You are, in effect, touching the screen and moving it in the direction of travel. Would you agree to that? Mm-hmm. That is what you said.
Yes.
And therefore, whereupon you are using a mouse or a disconnected input device like a trackpad, your argument, if I am not mistaken, was that that was not a direct interaction with the content, and thus the scroll direction should be reversed because that's how it was before multi-touch was possible. Yes?
I would just say more, it's when I say direct interaction, I mean the interaction between your finger and the content. So it is direct in the sense that you're interacting with the trackpad and that is directly moving the content. But I'm saying like your finger directly touching the screen. So as long as we agree with that, then sure.
Yes. However, what you are failing to take into consideration is that the multi-touch gesture in question is itself mimicking a different type of gesture, which would be clicking and dragging. So instead of clicking and dragging a scroll bar, we now use our finger to direct the content. But before we could do that with just a finger, what we were doing was actually a two-step manipulation. Not only were we not directly contacting the content as we do with a phone and a finger, but we were using an input device to control a secondary input mechanism, i.e. the scroll bar. So that was two steps removed from the content. And when switching to multi-touch, we no longer need to have that two-step interaction with the content. We can close the gap. We can go back to what we have on the smartphone, which is what we all want, direct content manipulation. No longer need we move our mouse to a bar of scroll, click on it, and drag it like some sort of a rural peasant from the medieval times. Now, we can simply use the will and the intuit of the mind to control the direction of content flow. Yes? And such, with that being the case, it is in fact more natural to move the content as it would if you were touching it directly, instead of mindlessly and pointlessly mimicking now a third step removal of the content. Why use your finger to mimic a mouse clicking a scroll bar when you could just do that?
Are you done yet?
Yeah.
Because I'm ready to finish this once and for all, because there is something that we have both forgotten about until this point.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question. Do people still use a mouse today, or is that an outdated, antiquated technology?
I use one every day.
Sure. And I do too at work. Now let me ask you, there's a feature, a piece of hardware, I suppose, that most mice have. Yours doesn't have it, but the vast majority do. Do you know what I'm referring to?
Yes, I assume you're referring to the scroll wheel on the mouse.
I sure am.
And the fact that it is, in most cases, the default to operate that in a downward direction to move the page down, which would, in fact, be the opposite of the so-called natural scrolling.
That is quite exactly what I'm referring to.
And I would further rebut your rebuttal by saying that that is a different and physical means of input, much in the same way that using a mouse to click a scroll wheel, that is, in its sense, it is a physical manifestation of the scroll bar. And when the scroll bar is relevant, then I agree with you. You take the scroll bar and you move it downwards, yes, to control the content. because that is a secondary and off to the side means of interacting with the content. Whereas your finger, be it one, be it two, be it screen, be it trackpad, or in fact, be it Magic Mouse, which is kind of a hybrid of the two, your finger's natural direction is to move the content as you would a piece of paper. If a piece of paper is on my desk and I can only see the top of it and I need to see the bottom of it, I'm going to move it that way.
Yes, because you're touching the piece of paper with your finger. Now, look, let me just say this. This, we can do our closing arguments because we're running out of time here. But the last thing I'll say is that if I have a mouse, if this is my mouse, I don't know what I'm doing, but let's say this is the mouse. And if you're scrolling on the trackpad, this is the motion that you're making. Not the trackpad, the scroll wheel. If you're scrolling the scroll wheel, you're going to move your finger down and the scroll wheel is going to turn down and the page is going to go down. Okay? If you're on a trackpad, you're making the exact same motion. You're using two fingers instead of one. Fair, fine. But you're making the same motion. So the fact that it's a physical manifestation, quote unquote, and all of that extra mumble jumble that you're trying to justify it with. Look, at the end of the day, it's very simple. If you're using a mouse and you want to scroll down, you go like this. If you're using a trackpad and you want to scroll down, you go like this. Use two fingers instead of one. I'll give you that. It's a little bit different. You know, a mouse and a trackpad are not the same thing. Okay, sue me. But at the end of the day, you're making the same motion. Same thing with up. Okay, you're going up. You're going up. You see how natural that is? You're going up and you're going up. Same idea.
The scroll wheel, however, is itself an antiquated and outdated means of... It was a way to interact with the scroll bar when our minds were too small to realize their full potential. And that would be my closing argument. And also, I should add that a lot of people do actually use the scroll wheel on a mouse in the same way, where you kind of, you go down to go up or whatever. Like, they use it in the same direction that you would move. You know, you scroll up on a phone, you scroll up on a trackpad, you scroll up on a scroll wheel.
Well, that is unnatural.
You can make it the same across all of them. Because that's, ooh, ha ha, that's it. That's my closing argument right there. Natural scrolling works on every input device: phone, trackpad, magic mouse, scroll wheel. You can do the same action with the same movement of the finger. Your argument, no matter how you slice it, requires scroll wheel, trackpad, mouse, phone.
Phones and computers are different devices. They've, you know, come closer over the years. Okay, look, you take the first iPhone and a Mac at the time, and they were a lot more different than, you know, the current iPhone is to a Mac. Things have gotten a lot closer. Apps can run on a Mac and a phone. Okay, the web is a big deal, and you can do quite a bit of stuff on both of them. But at the end of the day, they're fundamentally different devices. Okay? They're different devices. They have different means of input. You can control them differently, and that's okay.
Well, let's table this. I think the chat is split, but we have gone over time. So, unfortunately, the only thing more natural than natural scrolling is this segue to end the episode. Thank you guys so much for watching. I've been your host, Luke Miani.
And I've been your host, Noah Rubin. We will see you next time and have a great night.